The following is an excerpt from the Science Magazine podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
David Graham, online news editor of Science Magazine, is here with a wrap-up of some of the latest science news, including a story about how life gets better after age 50. Some new survey data here, Dave?
Exactly, Rob. There's been studies of what's called global well-being before, and this is just, you know, attempts to get a handle on how people feel about their lives, how happy they are, how stressed out they are, things like that. In the past, it's been really complicated to do this. What researchers have done before is they've actually had volunteers wear pagers, and researchers have literally paged them several times throughout the day, throughout the week, and then actually talked to the volunteers and said, how are you feeling right now? And you can imagine you can't do that with a lot of people, and something like that would take a lot of time. And so this new study is trying to find a much simpler way to do this with a lot more people. And what these researchers did here was actually the leader of the research team also works with the Gallup organization. And this is an organization that does these massive polls of hundreds of thousands of people and asks them, for instance, in the U.S., how do you think President Obama is doing? And that leads to figures about the president's approval rating, or what's your confidence in the economy? And that leads to ratings about consumer confidence and spending and things like that. And so this researcher said, well, why don't we just throw in a few questions about how people are doing? You know, these Gallup people are calling, you know, hundreds of thousands of people all the time. Let's just throw a few more questions into the survey.
So these are survey results from U.S. data?
This is U.S. data, and this particular study, the survey reached over 350,000 people. So you're talking about a really large data set here. And what the researchers found is that life does indeed seem to get better after age 50. People that were 50 and over, overall, they tended to report that they were getting much more happiness and enjoyment out of life than people that were younger than 50. Sadness was fairly flat through all the age groups, but negative feelings and things like worry and stress really tend to decline a lot after age 50. 50 seems to be almost this magic sort of benchmark. Anger as well falls steadily from about age 20 onwards. And they found that stress peaks in the 20s and starts to decline and then really plummets after age 50. And curiously, the researchers also found that global well-being declined from about age 20 to about age 50. And then all of a sudden at age 50, it does this turnaround where it starts to go up again and people start to feel a lot better about their lives.
Now, these are often referred to as the golden years. Are there any correlations here with money and people's finances?
Well, the researchers really wanted to try to find, you know, what explains this effect they were seeing. They looked at things like how many children the people had at home, whether or not they were employed, even whether or not they were married. And they really didn't see any correlation there. There was really no good explanation for what sort of changes after age 50 that would be responsible for this increase in global well-being.
Any speculation then?
Well, one researcher who wasn't associated with the study says that it's possible that older people may just be better at regulating their emotions. As we age, she says, we may just be more aware that our time is running out and we may begin to be much more careful and selective about what we focus on. So in other words, focusing more on the positive things than on the negative things. And that makes us happier overall.
It seems like this could be something that we could learn earlier in our lives.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you want to take something away from this, it's pay attention to your elders. You know, maybe they are dealing with life in a much more healthy way than you are.
But all your elders, right? Anyone that you know over 50, because this is a statistical aggregation here, right? Not particular to one person.
Right. And again, the power of the study is that they looked at so many people. So maybe don't just base this on your cranky great uncle, but talk to a lot of older folks, especially those that seem to be happier, and try to figure out what's making them so happy.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dave. So what other stories have we brought with you this week?
Well, Ralph, from happiness to fear, this next story is about what makes mice so terrified of cats, snakes, and other predators.
Knowledge that they're going to be eaten by them?
Well, that's the obvious one, but curiously enough, researchers have found that even mice that have been bred in the lab for hundreds of generations, so neither they nor their great-great ancestors have ever seen a cat or a snake, will still be petrified of them when one of these animals comes close. So researchers know there's something hardwired in these rodents that makes them afraid of these animals. They just haven't been able to figure out what it is.
So what did researchers do to investigate this?
Well, because they didn't want to put their research subjects in harm's way, what they did was they got the essence of these animals and put them on cotton balls. And so for cats, it meant getting cat saliva on cotton balls. And for snakes, it meant just getting the essence of snake skin on cotton balls. And they would drop these cotton balls into the cages with the mice. The first experiment was really to see, is this something that mice sort of smell in the air? Is it maybe a scent-based fear response? And they found that it is. In fact, mice have, they don't just smell with their noses like we do. They have something called the vomeral nasal organ, which is this specialized organ inside the nose that also helps detect odors, especially odors like pheromones, things that you and I wouldn't be able to easily detect.
So I don't have a vomeronasal organ.
You do not. But a lot of mammals, especially rodents, do. And what the researchers found was that they did some complex neuroscience experiments. And what they found was that this organ was becoming much more active when they would drop these cotton balls laced with predator scents in the cages with the mice. And not only that, these mice who had never seen a predator before, just dropping that cotton ball in there, and the mice would just totally freak out. They would either freeze in fear or they would try to run away. So the researchers knew it was something in the scent of these animals that was really triggering the fear response.
Not the cotton ball itself.
Not the cotton ball itself, exactly. So they figured out, okay, it's the scent, but they want to figure out, can we isolate exactly what particular part of the scent is it that's causing this fear response?
So they analyzed the different scents and found out what was common between them?
Well, they did that, but it turns out there was a lot in common between them. And so what they did was they tried to figure out all the constituent parts of the scent, and then they put all these constituent parts on separate cotton balls until they found a cotton ball where it was just that one constituent part of the scent that still terrified the mice. And what they narrowed it down to was a class of proteins known as major urinary proteins, or MUPs for short. And these proteins, despite the name, these proteins tend to be secreted in the urine, but they can also just be secreted in other secretions, like on the snake, maybe glandular secretions on the skin. But the important point is that these MUPs are proteins that a lot of animals excrete, especially animals that tend to be predators. And so, evolutionarily speaking, it makes a lot of sense for the mice to be able to recognize and be very wary of the scent, because they know when that scent comes close that there's an animal that's also coming close that has a good chance of eating them.
So do mice have these MUPs too?
They do. In fact, mice actually use these MUPs for intra-species communication. Researchers have shown that MUPs can cause male mice to fight one another, so they're somehow involved in aggression. And what experts say is interesting about this study is you've got this class of compounds, which was known already to be important for species communicating with each other, you know, within the same species. But now all of a sudden you've got this role of them being a sort of form of communication across species. And if you consider communication being a snake coming around and saying, I'm going to eat you, that's sort of what's happening here. You know, you have two vastly different species, but the mice can recognize something about the snake's scent that tells them to really be afraid of this animal. But obviously there's a difference between the mouse MUPs and the snake MUPs. Otherwise, the mice would just go around being terrified of each other.
Does this have any implications for species that don't have vomeronasal organs?
Well, the researchers say that a lot of what we know about fear behavior in mice also translates to humans. In other words, a lot of what happens on a neurological level in mice when they become afraid is very similar to what happens to us on a neurological level, and probably actually very similar among a lot of mammals. And so the researchers say, you know, learning more about how mice respond to fear might also help us understand more about how we respond to fear, and could potentially even lead to ways to treat anxiety and other phobias.
Okay. So as online news editor, what else is going on?
Well, Rob, in addition to our Science Nows and our Science Insiders, which we talk about in every podcast, we also publish something called Science Shots. And these are usually articles that we run a lot shorter. They usually only, you know, maybe about 100 words or so. And they usually have really nice art or a really cool video. But, you know, there's not enough going on there to really sustain a full news story. But we just, you know, we write these extended photo captions for them, basically. And we've been writing a lot of these, actually, in the past few weeks. I'll just run through some of my favorites from the last week. We have a story that we put up this week about how wild birds don't like organic seeds. They prefer conventionally grown seeds that are grown in chemical fertilizer and pesticides. You know, and people are always saying, you know, organic is better for you, but In this one case, at least, wild birds are really shunning organic. We have another sign shot about something called the devil's grimace. And this is a type of facial expression that 15th century Europeans saw on a lot of native artwork when they landed in the Bahamas and Cuba. And there's a picture of it you can see. But, you know, it looks like somebody baring their teeth. And so the explorers thought, you know, the natives were just very aggressive because all of their artwork and all of their furniture and bowls tended to have these types of engravings on them. But we're researchers compared this devil's grimace to a lot of human and even primate facial expressions, they're saying that the grimace is not actually aggressive. It actually signals submission and even happiness. So what these early explorers were interpreting as aggression was actually just friendliness, probably. And finally, we've got a really cool video about how cobras hit the bull's eye. There's apparently a group of researchers out there that, as part of their research, they wear face masks and try to get poisonous cobras to spit at them. And this is all about trying to figure out how cobras have such deadly accuracy when they spit venom at other animals. So be sure to check out all of these stories on the site.
Any big policy things happening?
Right. And also for Science Insider, we continue to follow the Gulf oil spill and what's going on in terms of the science of the spill and what scientists are doing to try to figure out what's happening and what can be done to stop it and prevent spills like this in the future. And we've also got a story about a new National Academy report about geoengineering, how more research should be done into geoengineering. And geoengineering is this whole idea of using technology to try to stave off global warming, everything from launching mirrors into space to seeding the ocean with iron so you create more microorganisms in the water that will suck up carbon dioxide. So a very controversial area of research. But the U.S. National Academy is saying definitely an area of research we should be putting a lot more attention into.
Okay, well, thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Rob.
David Grimm is the online news editor of Science. You can check out the latest science news, Science Now, Science Shots, and the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org.